We're talking about repetitive behaviors in this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. An involuntary movement or sound that a person makes with their body or mouth, these nervous habits or tics, everyone has at least one, whether you realize it or not. Clinical psychologist Doug Woods is dean of the graduate school and a psychology professor at Marquette University in Milwaukee. He also runs the Tic and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette. He was recently quoted in a New York Times article about repetitive behaviors. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit more about these repetitive, non-functional motor behaviors. Can you put it into our language?
Sure. Yeah, I know that's a mouthful. There are a couple different types. I mean, one of the things that is fairly common are tic disorders. This includes things like Tourette syndrome, a more chronic tic disorder. Those are repetitive, stereotyped movements, so you know, rapid eye blinking or eye rolling or mouth stretching, nose scrunching, coughing, repetitive sniffing habits, those kinds of things. Of course, in the public media, a lot of times Tourette syndrome, for example, gets this idea that it's all swearing and cursing, and that's actually a pretty rare symptom. But that's one area of repetitive behaviors that we frequently come across in our clinic. And then the other one is the more, I guess, more common in the general population, and that's things like nail biting, hair manipulation, hair pulling, hair twirling, and in its extreme forms, those kinds of problems are things we call trichotillomania, which is a condition where people pull and pull and pull their hair to the point where they have bald spots on their head. Then another example would be something like it's chronic skin picking, where people pick and pick and pick at a scab or a series of scabs, and they never heal, and they just can't stop doing it. So there are hosts of other kinds of issues as well. Bruxism would be considered another repetitive behavior problem, which is where you grind your teeth over and over and over again. Sometimes in adults, you still have finger sucking or finger biting, thumb sucking, you know, those kinds of things.
How prevalent are these repetitive behaviors? Does everyone have them?
You know, in most cases, many people do. I mean, if you look at just how many people do them, not necessarily that they're a problem, but how many people actually do these things, we probably have 75% of people in the country do at least one of these things occasionally. Not that it's a problem for them, but that's just that it's sort of a regular action. But when you start talking about for whom is it a problem, for whom does it actually cause physical damage, you know, on a recurrent basis, for whom does it actually, you know, impact their self-esteem or their self-consciousness, that's a little bit lower, obviously. You know, when we talk about Tourette syndrome or chronic tic disorders, we're talking about 1 in 100 kids will have a tic disorder like Tourette syndrome of some sort. When we talk about things like hair pulling, if it's a full disorder like trichotillomania, we might be talking about 1 to 3% of the population. That's actually a disorder that strikes mostly females. It starts around the age of 13, for example, and it's much more common in women. Skin picking might affect 5 to 6% of the population, chronic skin picking. About 8 to 10% of the population are chronic nail biters, to the point where they're, you know, hurting their cuticles, and they occasionally bleed from biting their nails.
Do children grow out of these things? Out of these behaviors? Do you often see these things emerge in childhood, and they can kind of just trail off over time?
Absolutely. They're all things that start, for the most part, in childhood or adolescence. Some of those can start later, but for example, tic disorders almost always start as a child, and about, you know, half to two-thirds of kids who have even full-blown Tourette syndrome age out of their tics occasionally, you know, in many cases. So that's true for tics. For trichotillomania, it seems to be a little bit more long-standing. If you develop trichotillomania when you're 12 or 13, there's a pretty good chance, which is pretty much the common age of when that disorder starts, that pretty much continues into adulthood if not treated. And chronic skin picking is often the same. Now, obviously, people can grow out of those as well. But those seem to last a little bit longer.
And so there are different categories, apparently, of these behaviors. And you, as a clinical psychologist, are probably more inclined to be able to understand what category everything falls into. Explain these categories.
Yeah, the categories are, I mean, all of our psychiatric nomenclature is a little bit arbitrary, to be perfectly honest with you. It's not as solid as we'd like it to be. But, you know, the tic disorders fall into their own category of tic disorders. The other issues, trichotillomania, chronic skin picking, other what we call body-focused repetitive behaviors like nail biting, finger biting, those kinds of things, those are disorders that we cluster under a group called the obsessive compulsive spectrum disorders. So they seem to be, we're not 100% sure, but they seem to be related to OCD.
And you run an OCD spectrum disorders clinic at Marquette.
Correct.
And so you are seeing these types of issues on a regular basis, I would assume. How do you treat these types of things?
Well, we, at our clinic in particular, we use non-pharmacological treatments. We use non-drug treatments. We use some versions of what we call behavior therapy, which is where we try to teach the patients new skills in managing their symptoms effectively. So we use a treatment we've developed called the Comprehensive Behavioral Intervention for Tics when we treat Tourette syndrome. And that takes about, we have an 8-week protocol, our 8-session protocol that we use to do that. And then for trichotillomania and chronic skin picking and the other OC spectrum disorders, you know, we use similar kinds of interventions. What we do is we try to find the cues in the environment that trigger those symptoms, because we all know that there are situations people walk into that make their symptoms worse. The hair pulling disorder, for example, people tend to get worse when they're a little stressed. And when they're a little bored, when there's just nothing else to do, they kind of fill the time with this habit. So we try to find what triggers those things in their environment and change their environment for them, help them change their environment so their symptoms just aren't happening as much. We also know that people with these problems have difficulties inhibiting unconsciously their ongoing behavior. So they're just not quite as able to stop themselves from doing things once they get started. So we have techniques that we call habit reversal training, which is a way to teach them to get out of the habit that they're in. It teaches them to be more aware of when it's happening, and then when they notice it's happening, to give them some other activity that they can do that stops the habit from occurring. And so we work together with them on those kinds of things. We also know that people, when they have trichotillomania and skin picking, that they sometimes have problems regulating their emotions in a normal way, I guess you could say. And so they use the pulling and the picking to help regulate their emotion in some cases. So we have to work with them on how to manage their emotions more effectively.
Talking with Doug Woods right now. He's a clinical psychologist, dean of the graduate school, and a professor of psychology at Marquette University. He also operates the TIC and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette. You can join in this conversation about repetitive behaviors. Are you a hair twirler, nail biter, or knuckle cracker? Do you or someone you know have body-focused repetitive behaviors? How do you deal with them? How does this affect your life, your self-esteem, your relationships, your workplace? 800-642-1234. You can ask your questions to Doug or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. That's 800-642-1234. Doug, let's look at stress. How does stress impact repetitive behaviors?
Well, the sort of typical belief is that stress makes all of them worse. But it's probably not as direct as you might think. You know, one way to say is, oh, you stress someone and that forces the behavior to happen. It's not so certain that that's the way it works. I mean, we do think that stress makes the symptoms worse, but we think it actually makes it worse because stress makes it harder to control these things. So it's not that the stress is forcing the symptoms out. It's that stress messes with our mechanisms that we use in our brain to help suppress action. And so it allows these things that normally would have been we would have been able to control a little bit to happen more. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Stress, anxiety, and fatigue can all factor into repetitive behaviors or nervous tics. We're learning about where these tendencies come from, the urge to bite nails, rock back and forth, to fidget or move the fingers. We're talking with Doug Woods. He's a clinical psychologist, dean of the graduate school, and a psychology professor at Marquette University, where he runs the Tic and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette. You can join in 800-642-1234. Do you or someone you know deal with a repetitive behavior or a nervous tic? How does this affect your life and your self-esteem, your relationships? Have you ever talked to a loved one about a tic before? How did that go? 800-642-1234. Post your questions on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation after this news update here on the Ideas Network. Do you have a repetitive behavior that you find yourself doing when you're stressed or bored? These habits can be mild, like biting your nails a couple times a week or pulling out a few stray eyebrows from time to time, but they can go to the extreme, like repetitive nail biting to the point of tissue damage or spending hours removing every last eyebrow hair. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're learning about repetitive behaviors with clinical psychologist Doug Woods of Marquette University. He heads up the Tic and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette, and we're gathering your questions, your observations about repetitive behaviors at 800-642-1234. Do you cope with a repetitive behavior? How has this tic impacted your life, your relationships? Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to the phones right away. Jeanette in Marquette, Iowa. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, good morning. I just was, surprised to find out that as a skin picker, a scab picker for my whole life, I'm in my 40s, but I'm not just a weird anomaly. And I was wondering, does he have some other ways to redirect this behavior? Because I've tried a bunch of different things, like wearing gloves and some other stuff so I wouldn't scratch it, scabs and bumps and healing poison ivy rashes.
Hmm. Right. So this story is common, and I wish it wasn't. The idea that, you know, people hear this or see an article about this and they're like, oh my goodness, this is a thing. I didn't know. I thought I was the only one who did this. I bet that sounds familiar. And so the truth is, obviously skin picking problems have been studied at some level for a long time. The question is what to do about it. So the caller found a number of things that she's tried, and those are pretty common things. Those are what we call stimulus control techniques, ways to try to slow the behavior down a little bit, wearing gloves, wearing creams, stopping the itches, those kinds of things. There are other things that we can do therapeutically, and we incorporate some of those things as well because sometimes they're helpful for people. But one of the things we, I would ask the caller to look for is something called habit reversal training. So they should find a behavior therapist in their area who understands habit reversal. And habit reversal is the thing where we teach people to notice when the pulling or the picking is getting ready to start, and teaches them some exercises that they can do that will try to slow the pulling down, or sorry, the picking. I say pulling and picking interchangeably because really we think they're kind of the same, different sides of the same coin. The other thing would be to look at, it from a therapeutic standpoint, how to manage emotions effectively. What does one do when one gets stressed, or how do we handle the situation when we get bored or when we start to, ruminate about particular things? Those are issues we also have to deal with in terms of a therapeutic treatment.
Jeanette, thanks so much for the call. Let's now go to Noelle in Madison. Hi, Noelle.
Good morning. I just want to share a little bit of my own experience. I've got trichotillomania. I was never diagnosed, but the behavior started at about 12 or 13, just like Dr. Woods mentioned. It's caused severe self-esteem issues for me in the past, that because I've pulled so much that I've had bald spots. And I have gone through some phases of treatment, and they've helped but not helped. It's decades later. I'm still pulling. Most commonly in situations like this, it's fortunate that I'm talking on the phone when I'm driving and sitting in one place. I have noticed that's one of the times that I have a tendency to pull. It's also just, you know, sometimes just sitting still and doing something. If I notice, if I can just get myself up and out of that situation, I can break the habit. But there's a lot of times that when I'm in the act of pulling, there's just no stopping it. It's so strongly there. My husband and I have had many conversations about this, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to recognize that, you know, people think these are just simple little habits that can be broken. These are some of the hardest things out there to treat. You know, and you really have to approach this from the perspective of this won't be cured, but what we can learn is how to manage it effectively. And it's, you know, I don't want to say this is the same as alcoholism or anything like that. It's not. But you know, when an alcoholic goes into treatment, they understand that this is here. You know, it's, even if I haven't, you know, had a drink in 20 years, I still have it, you know. And if I start into it, it can be right there again. And that's what we often find in people with trichotillomania, is that they can learn to manage it effectively for a while, and then things slip a little bit, and it comes back, and then they can manage it for a little while, and it slips. And just to take that long view of what this is, and that it does take a long time to manage effectively. You know, the truth is that the circuits in the brain that this problem deals with are the habit circuits. So the whole point of a habit is to be able to do things without thinking. And once that habit circuit is established in the brain, once that pathway is established, it doesn't go away. What you have to learn is to do other things instead of that, so that habit circuit doesn't get used anymore. So that's where the therapy comes in. We're training people to kind of work around their own habits, not to stop them necessarily, because the brain circuit will always be there.
Doug Woods, in your article in the New York Times, you mentioned that for many of your patients, the tics somehow become associated with a reward center. Explain what you mean by this. How is this rewarding for some people?
Sure. So, I mean, if you think about it, the pieces of the body that this involves, you know, the hair, the skin, the fingertips, those are all very rich tactile centers. It's a stimulating feeling. It feels good. You know, sometimes you rub your face or you run your fingers through your hair, and that's sort of relaxing. There is an element to this that has a sensory component that's very rewarding. You know, if you think about when animals are stressed, they might start to lick their fur, or when, you know, chimpanzees get together and they want to calm down, they'll groom each other. There's a very rewarding piece to you know, to grooming like that. And so that's one of the pieces of reward that can show up. The other piece of reward is that it does help calm people down. When they're feeling very upset and kind of frazzled and fried, they start doing these repetitive behaviors, and it actually brings them some calm while it's happening.
Oh.
Now, after it happens, then obviously they look at what they've done, and they're like, oh, no, and then they start getting sad and depressed, and that makes them upset, and then the cycle starts over again.
Noelle, thanks for the call. Nick in Milwaukee emailed. He asks, is there any connection between these behaviors and Asperger's syndrome or temporal lobe epilepsy? Is anyone doing research into either of those possibilities?
You do see, well, in Asperger's autism, you see a higher prevalence of what we would consider body-focused repetitive behaviors, body rocking, you know, skin biting, those kinds of things. So that is a much more common experience in people with those disorders.
Let's take Julie next in River Falls, who has a question along that line. Julie, go ahead.
My son actually has Asperger's, and I noticed that he is focused on skin picking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you have done other strategies beyond some of your habit reversal. Have you looked into neurofeedback or any other kind of therapies?
Yeah, there are people have looked at many. We don't do that in our clinic in particular, but the people have looked at a lot of different types of treatments. There isn't a lot of good evidence for very much anything but behavior therapy. That doesn't mean the other treatments like neurofeedback don't work. It just means we don't know as well. In terms of medication treatment for these kinds of things, you know, people have tried SSRIs like Prozac or Zoloft or Luvox or things like that. Those have not shown to be terribly effective for these problems. People have also looked at clomipramine. Clomipramine seems to have some effect on these symptoms. More recently, there's an over-the-counter supplement called N-acetylcysteine that has been shown to be effective in reducing trichotillomania in adults, but that was tried in kids, and it didn't seem to show any promise. It didn't work in that particular study for kids, but it did for adults. And so the truth is the treatment options are pretty scarce right now because most people, you know, they have this. The people who have it as a real problem have it and don't know, they don't know that it's a problem, so they don't tell their doctor about it necessarily, and they just haven't really generated a lot of interest in the medical community in terms of research yet. So that our treatment options are pretty scarce at this point.
Julie, thanks for your call. We're talking with clinical psychologist Doug Woods of Marquette University. He heads up the TIC and OCD Spectrum Disorder Clinic at Marquette, and he's a psychology professor there and the dean of the graduate school. Getting your questions about repetitive behaviors at 800-642-1234. Do you or someone you know suffer from a body-focused repetitive behavior? How do you deal with it in your life? How do you perhaps cover it up or deal with a loved one who has a repetitive behavior? 800-642-1234. Doug, when someone does seek out behavior therapy, how successful is it if they seek out treatment in really conquering this repetitive behavior?
Yeah, it actually can be very effective if people come in really ready for change. And I say that, I added that last part intentionally, because some people come in because they know that it's a problem for them, but the benefit to doing it sometimes really outweighs the problems it caused. So they come to therapy knowing that they should probably get help for it, but when it comes to actually trying to stop it, they realize that, I actually enjoyed doing this in some way, and it's hard to put in the work to try to stop it, because stopping habits are really hard. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody's in and they're ready to really work on it and get the help, we can get 70-75% of the patients we treat to greatly reduce or to completely stop the habit. And so those are pretty good numbers for treatment. The problem is a lot of people, once they get better, will experience periods of relapse. So we anticipate that some will start again. And, it's important that when they do, they come back into treatment and we kind of get them back on track, and then they might go down again. And then a couple months later, 6 months, 8 months, a year later, they might relapse again. And that's just a pattern of habits. They come back. And so we have to plan for that in therapy.
Let's take John now in Chicago. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Good.
Good, good. So my first question was kind of answered earlier, and that was just, generally what's the first steps for going along with something like this and treating it. Personally, it's more of a hair thing for me. I don't know, if I can be cognitive of it, and I can realize that I'm doing it and when I'm doing it. But it's just something I just can't stop for some reason. But I was just curious, in general, do most people that you see with, these tics and stuff, are they mostly cognitive of it and aware that they are doing it? Or is it, like you were saying earlier, more of a mindless thing where if they're bored, they just kind of fall into the habit of doing it? Or do most of these people really know that they're doing it offhand?
I would say yes, yes, and both. Right. So, because there's a lot of individual variation. So when we talk about things like pulling and picking, we've identified at least two styles that people have. And we think it isn't that you have one or the other, it's that you have both of them and you go in and out of them from time to time. So one style of pulling or picking is what we call automatic pulling. This is the one where you're sitting there, you're driving in the car, and your hand's up at your head. You don't even know it's happening. You may not be aware that you're even doing it. And then you look down, and there's a pile of hair in your lap that you've been pulling for the last hour. That's sort of this habitual, out-of-awareness. It gets started. Your brain kind of goes on autopilot. You're thinking of something else, and your hand's just up doing what it does. Then there's the other style of pulling, which is much, much more intentional. This is the type of pulling that we call focused pulling. And this type of pulling would sound something like this. Person comes home from work. Oh, I'm very stressed. I feel like I have to pull. They go to their bathroom. They lock the door. They pull out the tweezers. They turn on the bright lights, the magnifying mirror, and they look at their eyebrows and start plucking one by one out with the tweezers. And they start feeling better. They start relaxing. Or they pull their eyelashes out one by one by one by one. And they know they're doing it. They can't stop. They need to do it. And then we have, you know, people that go in and out of that. The person who is the automatic or habitual puller starts pulling their hair. They don't know they're doing it. They become aware of it. And then it's just like their hand keeps going and they can't end it. So they're all different types of styles. But the two main ones are what we'd call automatic and focused.
John, thanks for calling in. Doug Woods, nicotine addiction, very hard to break. How would you rate repetitive behaviors? Are they very tough to beat, or do they? You think you've beat them, and then they come back years later?
It's that one, the second one. They can actually, you can actually get them to slow down, and if not completely stop, fairly quickly. The question is, can you keep it done? And that, you know, can you keep it down? And that really involves changing, you know, a lot about how you set up your environment, you know, learning what your triggers are, learning to change those triggers or to eliminate those triggers from your life. Those are the big things that really take a lot of work. And, you know, for some people, you know, it feels good. It feels good to do that. And so you have to figure out what is it that's feeling good and give them that stimulation in some other way.
And then, you know, kids, so many, it's kind of a fad that's going away, but fidget spinners were so hot, so popular for a while. Are diversions like fidget spinners helpful at all?
Absolutely. Again, for certain types of pullers. So for the people who have, you know, this pulling in high-risk situations, you know, for example, like in your car driving, of course, you don't want to do fidget spinning while you're driving. That would be dangerous in its own right. But, you know, for people who are, you know, do a lot of pulling when they watch TV or are reading a book, having things around them like fidget spinners and learning to pick those things up as soon as they enter that situation can actually be really helpful. It keeps their hands occupied, and if their mind starts to go to this automatic habit, then they've got something else to do instead. And those are good strategies for those type of pullers and pickers. But if you've got someone who pulls or picks because they need to do that because they're stressed and they're tense and they need to pull to relax, the fidget spinner won't help them.
Habits that involve doing something to our body, such as a grooming behavior like hair pulling, nail biting, or skin picking, doing any of these grooming behaviors occasionally is quite normal. However, when they become habitual and excessive or negatively impact a person's life in some way, then it becomes, quote, clinically significant. And that's where Doug Woods comes in. He's a clinical psychologist at Marquette University. He leads the TIC and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette, and he's dean of the graduate school there. You can bring your questions, your observations about nervous tics or repetitive behaviors, 800-642-1234. Is a repetitive behavior a coping mechanism for you, especially when you feel stressed? What is that behavior? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back after this news update. Can't you just stop already might be a common reaction to nervous tics, and chances are the person cannot stop. The urge behind the repetitive behavior can vary from mild to extreme, and we're learning about these behaviors with clinical psychologist Doug Woods. He runs the Tic and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette University, where he's a psychology professor and dean of the graduate school. Ask a question about repetitive behaviors at 800-642-1234. Do you think your child will grow out of a tic? Or have you seen one become more habitual? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So we have a question here from, let's see, I'm just scrolling up here. One second. Yep, it is Jane from Chicago who sent an email. She said, I used to bite my nails and pick my skin. Ever since I was a child, I still do. It affects my self-esteem and confidence because I thought everyone knew I was ugly since I had open wounds all over my face and bloody fingers. My mom would yell at me and always tell me to stop, but I just couldn't stop. I started to bite my nails in secret, and as an adult, I spent hours in the mirror picking at my face with utensils. How should parents react or respond to this when children are suffering from this? Will my face ever recover and heal from all of these wounds?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. In terms of how parents should react, you know, it again, what's tough is this is pretty normal stuff. So, you know, at some level, so when you see your child start to bite your nails, it's normal for a parent to say, get your fingers out of your mouth, that kind of thing. Or you know, stop picking your skin or stop scratching at your face. You know, that's bad manners or whatever it might be. And so that's a normal reaction for a parent initially. But when you have a kid who goes on to develop one of these as a problem, those things don't work anymore. Believe me, by the time it gets to be a problem, if the people could have stopped, they would have stopped. You know, if it was as simple as just stop this, well, they would have done that already, because it is having an impact on their self-esteem. It is having an impact on their psychological functioning at that point. And so for a parent at that point, you have to recognize when it crosses over into a problem, you probably have to start changing, you know, how you would normally parent a kid with a problem or, you know, with a behavior like this. And that's where it's really important to go learn more about these conditions. You know, if you have a child who's pulling their hair to the point where there's hair loss, or they're picking their scabs repeatedly and they just don't seem to be able to stop, or they're biting their nails to the point where there are no nails and it's just bloody cuticles, you know, that's a good sign that there's something else going on here. And I think the first thing obviously to do is to get a medical evaluation to make sure there's not some other medical condition that could be causing any of these things. But then the next thing is to really start to look for good information about the conditions and start trying to find some support for what this is, start to find some good therapeutic contacts. And there are some places to go that you can do this. So one of the places to go, if you have skin picking or nail biting or trichotillomania, the hair pulling problem, is called the TLC Foundation for Body Focused Repetitive Behaviors. And so that's the place. I forget the exact web address. I think it's www.trich.org. But if you look up TLC Foundation for Body-Focused Repetitive Behaviors, you'll see it's a national patient organization that supports people with these particular problems. They have an annual conference every year where people from all over the country come together who have this, and they learn more about it. And they have, you know, support networks set up around the country. They have therapist referral guides for therapists who have been trained to do effective therapy. So it's a really good resource. If you have Tourette's syndrome or one of the other tic disorders, you know, there's a patient organization called the Tourette Association of America, which is a wonderful organization. It has its own web page. You can find that. If you go look up Tourette Association on the web, you'll find the Tourette Association's web page. Again, a great resource for people with those conditions.
And Mary from La Crosse emailed. She says, I suffer from chronic nail biting, and I also faced a lot of trauma and abuse in my home growing up as a kid. How much does our childhood, our home environment, and abuse trigger these behaviors or contribute to these behaviors?
You know, we've actually looked at whether traumatic experiences or abuse seems to trigger these things. And what we find is that it actually doesn't as a single cause. What can happen is obviously people who have been experiencing trauma or abuse have a host of psychiatric issues that stem from that: anxiety, depression, you know, nightmares, flashbacks, those kinds of things. And again, if repetitive behaviors are used to help people manage those emotions, then it's probably common that you would see those emotions, you know, people who've experienced trauma and abuse because they experience so much anxiety, depression, and so on due to the abuse, that they're more likely to use some of these pulling experiences to help manage those symptoms. But from what we can tell, it's not the case that the abuse causes this stuff to happen.
Let's take Mari now in Madison. Go ahead, Mari.
Hi. I was wondering, what is there, like, a possible correlation between obsessive Facebook update checking and social media opening on your phone just throughout the day? Is there, like, a mental side to tics? And what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I mean, this is considered, in the obsessive compulsive spectrum disorder. But what you're describing, the obsessive checking kind of thing, that might be partially related, but we haven't really looked at that. The truth is, though, the same circuitry in the brain that's involved in getting people in the habit of repeatedly checking their phone or Facebook or whatever is the same circuitry that you would involve by doing pulling or picking. We don't know that just because you have one, you're more likely to do the other, but we know that the same kind of brain circuitry would be involved.
Thanks so much for that, Mari. And Ian from Milwaukee called in to say that Dr. John Sarno was a pioneer in OCD, and he said most physical ailments, including OCD and repetitive behaviors, was the mind's way of distracting you from repressed emotions. These behaviors are like a defense mechanism for some people. Doug?
Yeah, the defense mechanism suggests one approach to understanding this, but I do think there's some evidence that these behaviors do help us manage emotions. We start to feel particular emotions we may not like, and this is a way to help manage those, to reduce those, whether that's through distraction or actually physically calming the body. I mean, you have to keep in mind, these things, we can talk about defense mechanisms and so on, but that would suggest it's something uniquely human, the human psyche. But the truth is, these behaviors happen in every species that has any kind of covering. In chimpanzees, I've seen videos of chimpanzees in captivity who pull and pull and pull and pull and pull to the point where they have bald spots just like a human would. Dogs get this. It's called canine acrylic dermatitis. You get cats who will lick a part of their fur off. You've got mice who will lick each other to the point where they pull hair off. Birds have feather picking disorder where if they're captive and stressed, they'll start to pull feathers out of their skin. So any species that has covering has some version of the same thing.
Well, Jennifer messaged on Facebook, and she says about something about a habit of her husband's when they're driving or watching TV or just talking, he repetitively makes shapes, letters, and numbers using his middle finger and thumb. She says it's kind of endearing, kind of cute, but is this a nervous habit?
It could be. The question there would be, what is the purpose of doing that? Is it really just sort of a habitual kind of thing that he's not thinking about doing, or is it that there's something in his head that he's worried about, and he thinks that by making the letters or numbers that will actually, you know, reduce the chance that whatever he's thinking about will occur? Because what I'm describing in the latter example was what we call obsessive compulsive disorder, where a person has distressing thoughts that causes them great anxiety, and then they do a repetitive behavior or compulsion to try to get rid of that. So if the letters or numbers are being drawn to, you know, avoid some kind of harm that they're thinking might happen, then it would be a different problem.
Do you see this as a growing concern in our society? Are we going to see more repetitive behaviors, or is this just something that's kind of going away?
I think you will, actually. I think the more isolated we become, I think if you look at animals, the more when they get isolated, this is when this behavior starts to happen more. And I think in many ways, with technology, started to isolate ourselves from each other a little bit more. So my guess is you probably will see an increase in this. I also think, you know, we're becoming more aware of it, so the numbers might go up, but it might be because now people are coming out and saying that they have these kinds of things. You know, shows like this do a great service to people who have been suffering by themselves. I know, like an earlier caller talked about, I've been doing this for years. I didn't know this had a name. And so that I think you'll see growth for a couple reasons.
Is there a level of shame that people have to deal with when they are trying to cope with a repetitive behavior?
Oh, that's pretty much the main thing they're trying to deal with, because they have to cover it. They have to hide it. You know, the woman who pulls and has a huge bald spot on the crown of her head has to find wigs and try to cover that. Or she wears her hair in a certain way and spends hours preparing her hair in a certain way, or applying the makeup to cover the scabs or that she's gotten from picking, or wearing the right clothes, doesn't want to go swimming, doesn't want to go out in windy weather for the fear that the hair might get messed up and the bald spot revealed. I mean, there's a whole a ton of time that gets spent managing so they don't get found out, because it's a very shameful kind of disorder.
Doug, as we wrap up here, what final message would you like to leave with us who may suffer from these repetitive and non-functional motor behaviors?
Just know that there are treatments out there, that you can overcome this. You can learn to manage it effectively. It takes a lot of work and some commitment to doing it, but there is help out there. I would encourage you to go see the TLC Foundation website. I would encourage you to go see the Tourette Association website if you have tics, because there are a lot of people out there who have this. And I think the more you search that, the better it'll help you feel, because you realize you're not alone. And there are a lot of people out there who do this who feel like they're the only one.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for joining us and explaining it.
Okay, thank you.
Doug Woods is a clinical psychologist and a psychology professor at Marquette University, where he's dean of the graduate school. He operates the TIC and OCD Spectrum Disorders Clinic at Marquette, and was recently quoted in a New York Times article titled, "Are You a Hair Twirler, Nail Biter, or Knuckle Cracker?" This hour of The Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about fall beer for our Wisconsin weekend edition of The Morning Show. Hope you'll join us for that, and thanks for listening.